I'm Rick Moore, and this is Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore, brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, and by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. All right, we're back now with Taylor Ann Bradford on Connections. Taylor Ann Bradford, of course, Gloucester Times journalist. And Taylor, welcome back to SO. And how are you doing in this brand new, wide open year?
I'm doing well. Yeah, I am eagerly, getting outside as the weather is warming and as less people are wearing masks. I'm having to reorient myself to figure out, you know, who is who in this crazy world that we're living in.
Well, it is funny how people look differently, after a year of wearing the masks, and it's been quite a change. However, I think, again, we've talked about it many times, Cape Ann seems to have done it right, and we've seemed to weather the storm pretty well. Do you find that in your travels?
I do. I think, right, that concept of we're all in this together really held true throughout it all. There's bumps and bruises along the way. But I think that, you know, Gloucester being a tourism town, this summer is, I think, really going to help boost the economy here in the city and help those local businesses that might have been struggling throughout the past year.
Well, as a tourist town, one of the attractions in Gloucester, of course, is Good Harbor Beach. And my wife and I were walking the beach one day after work. We looked over to Salt Island, poison ivy infested island that you can walk out to on the sandbar at low tide, and we saw these vertical fence posts, and we were wondering what they are, and you know what they are.
Yeah, so they are, as you said, there's 38 posts from what you can see through binoculars, and the question is, why are they there? Is their structure going to be built? Is it keeping people out, keeping something in? And so I made a phone call over to the owners of the island, the Martin Yeti Real Estate Group, the Martin Yeti family, and they cleared up pretty quickly. They're putting goats on the island, which is something that I was not expecting. So the island, I mean, I don't know about you, but growing up, I always traveled over the bridge and would have many summer days going over to that island and, unfortunately getting poison ivy, but also having a blast and always thinking that it was public land, but it is private. And the Martin Yeti family is planning to put goats on the island to eat up all that poison ivy to kind of clear it of kind of all those things that make the island a little bit less accessible to people. And I think that the interesting thing, Rick, is that right here, goats, you see fence posts, and my immediate thought is, this is the start of something bigger. This is just the start of maybe development of what's going on. The rest of the community started to ask those questions as well, especially as, a rendering of a photo of a mansion and a lighthouse also of the island started to appear around Briar Neck, and people started to question, what's been going on. And so again, I made another phone call over to the family, and they mentioned that, they have no intentions as of right now to build anything, and that the goats there are strictly to kind of get rid of the poison ivy. The most construction and something of a development might be a park bench or two for people to sit on and admire the views. And the rendering had been drawn up by one of their architect friends. But they said that was just a dream. And that, John Paul Martinetti and his father, Ron, had mentioned, that's a dream that we have. That could be anywhere. They said, do we have the building that? No. Would we like to see it someday? Maybe. But most likely they said, it's not going to be built and it's just a dream. And they're not expecting that to pop up here anytime soon or for that process to go about. And so it really does seem that they're just going to be goats. And I ask, when should the community expect these goats to make their way over to Salt Island? And they kind of mentioned that, they're still in the process of finishing up the fences and getting the goats, inquiring them to put them on the island. So we'll see what happens. And, Ron really emphasized that these goats, the fences that are there to keep the goats in, not keep people out, and they really wouldn't want to do anything that would damage the island or the residents' experience of something that has been so near and dear to so many, whether it's groups like the Friends of Good Harbor, those who live on Briar Neck or those who visit Gloucester just for the summer. So it'll be interesting, and I don't think the story is over, especially as the ghosts are there. I am eager to make my way across the sandbar to go visit them once they're there and kind of see how the relationship between visitors and ghosts are, and also how the ghosts, you know, fare the weather that we have, and being on an island might not be too kind to them. But we'll have to see. That's the thing, is these type of stories, you kind of just have to wait and see, and continue the conversation as best you can. So,
well, several layers to that onion, for sure. My first thought was, good for them. I didn't know the island was privately owned, and the fact that they're going to be clearing the poison ivy, that's great for tourists. And as you say, is there a deeper motive? And the thing I'm thinking, boy, getting electricity and water over there, and, you know, on the northeast side during storms, what the heck could you possibly build? And as you say, how do the goats shelter? I can't wait to see the next chapter.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And I want to make sure to note, too, there's been many chapters prior to this. The Marinetti family purchased island back in 2017 for $250,000. And prior to that, Friends of Good Harbor and a lot of other conservation groups were trying to acquire it. And obviously that purchase and sales agreement fell through, and the Marinetti family purchased it. But I think it continues that conversation of people here in the community trying to preserve the natural landscapes around us. Martin and his family, their company is based out of Woburn. And so it's this interesting thing of the locals are really trying to preserve, and it sounds like the Martin family is as well. But we'll kind of see what that looks like going forward.
Well, I think in 100 years or 200 years, Gloucester will be mostly vertical steel everywhere. But that's an interesting thing, and thank you for that story. I thought it was absolutely fascinating. Now we know what those fence posts are for. But in a related story, parking in Gloucester around in the neighborhoods around Good Harbor Beach is going to see a different look.
Yeah. So, and there's been an addition to 45 city streets and roads that have been designated as resident only parking this summer, and tow away zones for anyone else. And so this is going to make it much more difficult for out-of-towners to come and park wherever they see fit. But I think it's going to really alleviate a lot of problems for residents who have bought homes near the beach and enjoy that kind of quietness on their streets throughout the year as much as they can. And so these roads, there's 45, so I'm not going to list them off here in our talk, Rick, but those are found on our website, on the city's website. But these roads, most of the neighborhoods surrounding Gloucester beaches, will now be resident-only parking from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. from May 1st to September 15th. What they found last year as they were being inundated with out-of-towners coming is that a lot of people would just park and accept the fine. It's a $15 parking fine last year, and so people said, you know, it costs the cost of getting a parking sticker, paying for beach parking versus paying for a fine weren't that much different, and they knew that they weren't going to get towed because the city was, you know, low on tow trucks, and so, you know, they said the likelihood of getting towed was not that high, and so the city council really made an adjustment this year that the fine and the violation for parking in resident-only parking as a non-resident or without a sticker has been raised to $50.
Mm-hmm.
And so 50. And so that's going to be, I know, a punch to anybody's budget book if they choose to park in the wrong spot. And so that'll be interesting as we kind of go forward and see what's been going on. As it kind of sees it. So resident parking figures cost about $5, and they're available in the for the purchase at City Hall. An interesting thing to note that I was made aware of yesterday by the mayor's office is that if you have a resident beach sticker, you do not need to get a resident parking sticker.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a beach sticker already, that kind of counts as your resident parking sticker. However, the other way around, if you have a resident parking sticker and you want to use that as a beach sticker, you like to get onto the beaches, like at a Good Harbor Beach parking lot, you can't do that. So it's a little bit confusing. But if you have a beach sticker, there's no need to get a resident parking sticker. If you have a resident parking sticker and you want to park in beach parking lot, you need to get a beach sticker. It's an interesting narrative, and I think I'm interested to see how much the city makes on parking tickets this year, because last year was crazy, Rick.
Yeah.
We saw, you know, on one July weekend alone last week, the Gloucester Police issued 478 parking tickets worth $31,000 in fines,
wow,
which is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll kind of see what this year holds, especially as, you know, there's a lot loose regulations around COVID. And so I'm sure it, you know, although we saw a lot of people, you know, running to Gloucester as an oasis during the pandemic last year, a lot of people are running to it for a celebration this year. So I doubt that the crowds are going to dwindle, but I wonder how many are going to try to play that line of parking illegally.
Well, I did see the first time ever a car being towed from Good Harbor yesterday. I forget the name of the road, Atlantic Road or whatever it is that goes by the beach club there, Bass Rocks Beach Club, where the bridges are. And there was a car being hoisted up, taking it away, and I hadn't seen that before. So, people should be aware of that, most definitely. And too bad that we couldn't have shuttles from other areas like you do in ski resorts where people could park somewhere and then just shuttle over to Good Harbor. But you know what? Good Harbor at high tide has become... it has really shrunk. It's not a big beach anymore, especially with the piping plover cordoned off area there. So people should also be aware that at high tide, there's not a lot of room at Good Harbor Beach.
Yeah.
All right, so let's go to a couple of other stories that you continue to work on, and we'll start first with the other side of town in West Gloucester, the gun range.
Yeah, so this story, I know we've talked about it a lot, but the firing range over at West Gloucester behind Haskell Pond Reservoir has been a contentious topic for about over a year, maybe 2 years now, as the city had amended ordinance last spring to, make it available to the police department to, you know, do their biannual qualifications for their firearms. But this is quite a jolt to the community, and that jolt led on to conversations and lawyers and lots of site visits and discussions. As of, you know, last week, the city has amended the ordinance, and now the West Gloucester Fire Range is completely shut down, you know, not only just in use, but, you know, through the city ordinance. They changed the ordinance and they got rid of the entire kind of thing as it has been written and replaced it with something that said to never be used as a firing range or shooting range again. So I feel like that's a pretty definitive statement. And so that firing range is now no longer, it's closed down, and the city's police department will have to find a new location to do their qualifications. I spoke with Ed Conley yesterday, and he had mentioned that they were able to get their qualifications for this spring done at the Cape Ann Sportsman Club, but they're also looking for a more permanent option as they understand that they're taking up time and resources from that organization every single time they have to do qualifications. So they're looking, you know, whether it means to renovate the one that they have inside their police department, whether it means getting kind of a box structure you can do that's kind of contained, or looking for a more permanent outside setting. So I know a lot of people and abutters of that area are ecstatic to hear this news, and they've worked really, really hard to make the outcome come the way it is, especially if the city at first weren't willing to budge on the fact that a lot of residents were upset. They were kind of saying, you know, we can compromise the timing that it happens, but this is really important that the Gloucester Police Department uses the space. And, you know, the residents agreed that it's important for the Gloucester Police Department to do their qualifications. They just didn't want it there, and so they actually hired the residents hired lawyers to kind of do some deeper digging, and found that the land is protected and that is really not legal to have a firing range there. And so once they showed that with good evidence that was illegal, the city kind of backed down and said, you know what, you're right, and now there will be no more guns over in that area.
All right. And another grassroots movement has come to fruition up on the north side of Gloucester. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so you might have heard or at least seen as you drive in Annisquam some bumper stickers that say 20 is plenty for Squam. And that is a grassroots effort by the residents of Annisquam Village to ensure that people kind of slow down in that area, especially as there are some tight roads and tight corners and blind spots, especially on Leonard Street, And so they've been working with, the vice president of the city council, Val Gilman, to reduce the speed from 30 miles per hour to 20 miles per hour in that area. There's been a lot of close calls. And so this is something that we've been covering on for a while. Because there's no signs there, legally it reverts to 30 miles per hour, but they wrote a petition, reached out to Mass DOT, got a letter of recommendation from Gloucester Police Chief Ed Conley, and they officially have made it so that it is now 20 miles per hour on Leonard Street. So if you're driving down Leonard, doesn't matter if you see a bumper sticker or not, there are now signs there alerting you that the street speed has changed. And I know maybe it's a story about, speeds reducing to 10 miles per hour. How interesting is that? And I think the thing that makes this story really, really interesting is that it's a grassroots effort of residents coming together and speaking, this is a safety hazard and we really want to make a difference in our community because this is something that's impacting everybody. I think following the story through, it really shows just how much they all work together to make this happen and, go through the right processes to get to this point. So that sign has changed to 20 miles per hour. So if you're driving down there, make sure you take it nice and slow.
All right. That's Taylor Ann Bradford, Gloucester Times journalist with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore. This has been Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore. Brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Connect with Connections by emailing msonewsports@gmail.com.